-3 is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it. Must be 21 or older.
-3 with Dave Dameshek.
These pipes are clean. And how high and hello and welcome to -3, presented as ever by our pals over at Omaha. It was a fine weekend, better certainly than my Friday was. I finally got the colonoscopy. Unpleasant. Maybe we'll talk about that in our goat and goat segment, the examination of the full range of the condition of sports and the world at large there. Goat, the greatest of all time, and the goat, the one who we're going to blame for our collective failures. Let's get into all of it. So much to talk about. The Pittsburgh Pirates are undefeated at the time of this recording. NC State is rolling. It's special stuff, especially for old sports fans. Eddie Spaghetti behind the glass doesn't count as one of those. Kevin Hench, though, does. Hi and hello to you, Kevin Hench. How was your weekend?
Oh, it was delightful because this tournament took me back to the glory days of when March Madness was king. NC State and Purdue go into the Final Four. For those of you who appreciate the old Manning cast, 1980, Purdue goes to the Final Four with Joe Barry Carroll, who would become known as Joe Barely Cares. I'll get into him in Goat and Goat in a sec. And then, of course, NC State going back to Valvano and Derek Wittenberg and Lorenzo Charles and Thurl Bailey and Terry
Gannon. Ozell McQueen! You almost got it right. I'm here to help you out there, Hench.
Ozell McQueen, just so exciting to think about when we were kids and this tournament was king and how it became king with that run in the 80s was just incredible. I've been down on the tournament for all the reasons we've talked about here, but it's sort of that NC State run just reminded me of when it was the greatest event of all time.
Well, what we're talking about, I guess, is because, yes, it resonated to me in a way that Florida Atlantic didn't. And so NC State is a brand that for the olds like you and me, we remember their special run in 83 with Jimmy V and all of that. And so, as far as that goes, April Fool's Day, 4-1, talk about a brand and something that makes it special is Special Deeds and the Sid Finch. If you have not read the Sid Finch piece by the late, great George Plimpton, do yourself a favor and read it through and understand that people like me and Kevin Hench, not dummies, Hench is a very smart guy, I'm of average intelligence, but both of us were duped, as was pretty much everyone else in the nation. George Plimpton wrote a lengthy biography that was completely fictional about a made-up person named Sid Finch who threw out, 135 miles an hour? And he could throw strikes consistently. The catcher would just hold his glove up, and thank goodness he could hit it right on that spot because the catcher would get killed otherwise if the ball missed his glove. Remember all that, Hench?
Of course. Because you were also like slotting him into the rotation. All right, well, he's obviously going to go 33-0. So, yeah, it's going to really transform the Mets.
Embarrassing that we bought it, but still remarkable stuff. So, okay, let's get into our goat and goats here. And I can bellyache if you want, but let's pick up what you just started there. I think that March Madness, like the NFL is more or less over the course of our lifetime impervious to swoons in quality of play. There have been entire decades of Super Bowls, the signature event, obviously, of the sport, where they were just all blowouts. It seemed like in the 80s, every time the NFC would win by 17 touchdowns, and that was that, and we accepted it and came back for more the following autumn. I think March Madness, you can make a claim that it establishes itself as the greatest or it makes the short list of the best things in sports because it had a sustained streak of great Final Fours, right? I mean, we start to pay attention, and I understand why Bird v. Magic gets all the shine, because look at what happened to those two guys once they got to the NBA. But that was just the tip of the iceberg. This was a monumental run. 83 is NC State. We could go back and forth here. Dr. Duncanstein in 80, 81 is Isaiah. Wasn't that the night that Reagan got shot too? And it was kind of like a controversy that should we go through with this game with the president laying in a hospital room? And they're like, let's do it. He would want us to play it, right?
And then I believe it was the Key Smart game later in that decade.
87.
That the game would be on opposite the Oscars. Like
is that right?
I couldn't watch in my dorm room because my roommate wanted to watch the Oscars. Like I had to go to someone else's room to watch Howard Trish miss that free throw and Keith Smart make the baseline jumper.
Oh, Daryl Thomas. They feed it to him in the post. The big man built much like DJ Burns, but not with his soft touch. Didn't know what to do with it. He faced the basket and realized, I'm not taking the shot of a lifetime here. And he kicked it back out to Keith Smart. And as he said after that game, after Daryl Thomas made that pass, he said, I kicked it back out to Keith Smart and it was bucket. Fuck it! They won the national championship. Don't forget, Derek Coleman missed the front end of a 1-1 freshman lefty for the Cuse. Missed that to set up the heroic deed of Keith Smart at IU.
And Howard Trish, the two missed free throws. That was Syracuse's Achilles heel.
Yeah. I remember
the Derek Coleman two-handed rejection of Joe Hillman. Was that the guy's name?
Sure.
Yep. Okay, so let me ask you, when did you get to Bloomington?
88. So I missed it. In fact, right. Like Keith Smart was in my dorm at the, like in whatever it's called, the, you know, the first big powwow and everything. And they're like, yeah, the Keith Smart, of course, yeah, everybody knows him. Right. And people are like, oh my God, it's Keith Smart. I'm bitter because I didn't get to see Bob Knight, one of Bob Knight's teams win a national championship. I thought it was attendance.
Were you rooting for Indiana in 81 or 87?
Oh, wait, I mean, 81, I was a little kid, but 87, no, I was apathetic. I had no rooting interest in that.
Oh, my God. That's wild, because the crazy thing is, and I'll get to it in good goat, but is I was rooting for Indiana State because Bird was already a Celtic.
Right.
It's so bizarre that you could watch an entire college season knowing you were getting that guy, which is crazy. I'll just jump right in with my good goat.
Well, I'm doing mine, friend. 82. Okay. You had, that's an iconic game by itself, is the wrong way Freddie Brown versus James Worthy and Michael Jordan hitting the shot and all of that. Georgetown in the now unrecognizable royal blue uniforms versus, because then I think it's the next year they make the switch to the navy and gray that, you know, is the iconic look for Hoya Paranoia. But that's a special game that announces Patrick Ewing. Remember, there was nothing like Patrick Ewing, at least in my lifetime. I missed the whole Lou Alcindor and Bill Walton run at UCLA. So this was that big man who his Achilles heel was all the goaltending. And remember, John Thompson in 82 told him, like, keep doing it. Just keep doing it because it'll intimidate ultimately UNC. Even though they'll get some free buckets early, they'll stop taking the little bunnies because they'll be afraid of what 33 might do them. And then 83, Lo Charles at the rim, Derek Wittenberg. We were going back and forth last night about this. It's wild to go back and watch those games when Derek Wittenberg is launching from 22, 24, 25 feet. And there's no three-point line. What was the strategy going on there?
Well, it's wild because after we were texting, I started, you know, I did the deep dive, like, what was going on? And that's when the three-pointer was moving in. Like, so the ACC tournament had a three-pointer,
right.
And then the three-pointer goes away for the big dance, and they're still chucking it from 25, which is insane.
But ACC was the one that didn't, it wasn't 19.9. It was like 17, right? There were some leagues that it was bizarre to look at the 3-point stripe inside the top of the key.
Yeah, no layup.
Oh, Hench. I mean, how is it possible that you would have been college aged around that time? And there wasn't any team in the country that'd be like, we could use this guy. Like, boy, he can make it from 30. My
three-pointer came in the year after I graduated from high school, like where all my buckets came from. It's a good what if, you know, what if all those Hench three-pointers, what Division III team?
Well, you know, my sad story, right? They did put the three-point in before my senior year. And I was really excited about it. And I set my goal, a simple goal. God, you know, Dave was barely going to make the team. 13th man on a 12-man team. And I got on there as an afterthought, as a senior, worked hard. You know, that's what Damashek's all about. And against our century-old rival, last regular season game of the year, obviously I wasn't going to be playing in any playoff games. I wasn't going to be suiting up for those, but I was suited up. And we were up 20 in the late stages of the fourth quarter. And my teammates, at the time I thought, what nice guys. They just wanted to laugh at me. I was their punchline. I didn't know it at the time. I thought I was just one of the fellas. But they were like, put Sheck in. Come on, put Sheck in. Clear the bench. Finally, after the ninth man and then the 10th man and then the 11th man, my pally, Richie Perkins, finally got in there. Finally, a couple minutes left. Damashek was put into the game and the crowd cheered. Again, did I know that I was the punchline? That I was a clown? No, I didn't. I was excited to be in the game. And finally, I was going to have a chance to make my three. And as you know, Hench, at my best, which was not very good, but at my individual best, if I was all alone with all the time in the world, I could stand there. I'm coordinated. I'm just slow, but I'm super coordinated. I can stand there and make a three-pointer if uncontested, as you know. Not as much as you do. Do you have anything to add there, Hench?
I've got so many questions. First of all, I want to go back to the Sheck working hard part.
I wasn't. I used to get drunk before.
Me and Richie used to get. I can't see you diving for a loose ball. I can't see you taking a charge. No. I can't see you doing anything that would define working hard on a basketball court.
What I did was the one virtue I had, as I say, is when we would do this, because we were end of the bench guys, so we served as the scout team always. And so if we were going to throw a zone at a team, I would then be a wing and I would, catch and shoot all day. And I could make it tough on you on a good Damashek day. I could knock them down if you left me unchecked. I could do that. But outside of that, I had zero value outside of behaving like a goon in the locker room to lighten the fellas up and have a laugh. Me and Richie we're good at doing that. And as far as that goes, we would in Swissvale area on my way back to Wilkinsburg, Turtle Creek from downtown, there was a beer distributor known to high school kids that you would just pull up to. It was a drive-through. And they would just throw the cans of beer, the cases of beer in your trunk, no questions asked, and you would be all set for the weekend. And so me and Richie and Brett and Ben would do that every Friday. And whatever beers were left over from that case, me and Richie would polish off in the car after class and before practice on Mondays.
This part of the story tracks. This is Sheck hustle.
Now, some of the time, because it was winter in Pittsburgh, those beers would freeze or largely freeze. So what? We would power through them. We weren't going to. That's what I'm talking about when I say work. We had to work to make those beers drinkable. Beer popsicles. So we would go and goon off in practice on Mondays, drunk and otherwise. What was ironic was our best pal was Ben Losky. And he was the captain of the team. And he was the most outraged that we would show up drunk and we'd screw around in practice. And he would throw the ball at me all the time. And he'd be like, you can just stop effing around. This game may not be serious to you because you're two clowns, but the rest of us want to win it. And be like, light up, man. You were drinking those beers with us last night. Like, we would talk. Anyway, so last game of the season, the clock's ticking down. And with about 20 seconds left, finally, maybe my moment is at hand because the other team is at the free throw line. We're up 20, as I say. And everybody on the bench is shouting at me as I take the slot right next to the shooter at the stripe. My teammates are shouting, no, back up, Sheck, back up. So I go behind the shooter to the top of the key and they're still shouting, further back. I go to midcourt. It's a ridiculous place to be standing for when the other team is shooting free throws, but I do it. And the guy misses it. And they kick the ball to my guy, Richie. And I'm making way to my favorite spot, the right baseline. That's where I know I'm going to make it. And I've been practicing all season long, and I know I'm going to make it. And I know that this sounds like 2020 hindsight, but somehow I felt good. I knew I was going to make this shot this day. That's not my usual way, but I knew on this day the stroke was sound. And Richie gets the ball, and I see him, and he's at about the 10-second stripe, and he throws the ball to me, and now the ball's coming to me, and out of the right corner of my eye, I can see the people in the bleachers standing up in anticipation, ready to laugh at me, or maybe even cheer. This ball should go through the hole. The ball is on its way to me, and I decide, you know, it would be embarrassing in this special moment. What if your toe is on the line? Like, just make sure. So I just made sure my toe wasn't on the line real quick. And I looked back up, and the ball was already on me, and it hit me in the hands and went out of bounds. And that was the end of my high school basketball career.
You know what's wild about this story? Okay. So Spaghetti, what our text chain the night before this kind of serves as our pre-production meeting. So our pre-production meeting is like, we're going to talk about Isaiah Thomas. We're going to talk about Ralph Sampson. We're going to talk about Akeem Olajuwon. We're going to talk about Chris Mullin.
Surprise.
We're going to talk about when the March Madness was king, the Final Four, all these Hall of Famers. And then we get a 20-minute story about Dave Damashek dropping a ball out of bounds.
You know what did go through the hole? That colonoscopy thing. I wasn't awake for it. That was good.
Right, well, speaking of
shout out to that guy. The doctor said when I woke up from it, he's like, go home and celebrate. And I said, why? He said, because I took two huge polyps out of you that would have been cancerous if I didn't get them. And I'm like, shouldn't we wait on the celebration till we know that they're not cancerous? But either way, let me squeeze in a quick break here. You know, when the conversation turns tampers, I always go with my number one as Caesars. Let's talk about them a little bit, shall we? Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesars Palace. All this can be yours when you bet with Caesars Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns rewards credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, register using this code. Listen up. Omaha Full, the word Omaha and the word full. And then you place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great. If you keep those winnings, but if you lose, you'll get your stake back as a bonus bet. 21 and over only. Offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. New users and first $10 plus wager only. Must register with eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss. Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt. Tier credits and reward credits will be added to account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See Caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans. Massachusetts, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harrah's, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER or West Virginia, 1-800-GAMBLER.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
To my larger point, right, Hench? I mean, like, March Madness is important to us now, and we've gotten cynical about it and all of that. But it was because that there were, it never skipped a beat for 10 years. I mean, it went from then the Wolfpack and then that special Phi Slamma Jamma against Georgetown finally getting theirs and Ewing and John Thompson hugging wrong way Freddie Brown 2 years after his colossal error. And then Nova gets Georgetown the next year. And then never Purvis and Louisville takes down Duke in Krzyzewski's first good team. Can you name that starting five? Go, Hench.
Mark Allery.
Yes. Very nice. Maybe they're not their best player. Their second best player.
Probably. Tommy Amaker.
Very good.
Johnny Dawkins.
Nice. That was their best player. Kind of looks like the Duke Blue Devil if you look at him close.
David Henderson.
Very nice. You're missing one that's remarkable. Eddie Spaghetti knows
Eddie
his
Ferry. Player. Danny Ferry.
Danny Ferry was the guy who was added as the freshman late to that upperclassman group. You're forgetting, of course, the face of college basketball, arguably this side of Dickie V, Jay Billis.
Oh, okay. Well, understandable to forget him as a player, obviously.
Yeah. Keith Smart, but then Keith Smart happens in 87. Then it gets sideways when Danny Mann beats Oklahoma because Pitt should have been in that one.
When you think about it, is that those two Dean Smith championships both require complicity from the opponent, right?
It's amazing that he would really, right.
Brett Brown throws the ball to the other team and Chris Webber calls a timeout that he doesn't have. Also
Ramil Robinson in 89. That's another one. I'm ticking through them in my head now, but 89.
Oh my God, that Illinois team with Kenny Battle and Nick Anderson and Bardo and Kendall Gill. Crazy. Okay. Marcus Liberty. We're talking about, okay, we'll go bad goat. You went to the proctologist. Duke Betters got a Tyrese Proctor ecology as Duke just shoved it up their ass in a spectacular fashion. Tyrese Proctor 0-for-9 from the floor, 0-for-5 from three, but Duke men, not the biggest basketball abomination in Durham over the weekend. The Duke women. Now let's talk. Okay. Look, you know, I think, you know, what Kim Mulkey is learning, it's like, oh, if you want equality, then equality means you're going to get, you know, put under a microscope and hit pieces, whatever. It's like, ask Bobby Knight about hit pieces. Ask Bobby, like, you made it. Hey, Kim Mulkey, you're a winner. And you get winners by doing it this way. And that's equality. Congratulations. They're writing about you in the newspaper and they're saying terrible stuff about you. You made it. So true equality is not just saying how awesome Caitlin Clark and Juju Watkins are. That's great. But true equality is when you go, oh my God, this is terrible. You played, hey, women of Duke, you played terribly. Watching the Duke women against Connecticut was like watching women's basketball in 1977. It was so horrible. So I don't think this has ever been televised. I don't think basketball with this ratio has ever made it onto TV. The Duke women had 8 assists and 23 turnovers. The 1-to-3 assist to turnover ratio, it was such an abomination, and then Connecticut was so bad they didn't even cover the spread. Anyway, so true equality is you get to be the bad goat for being terrible.
I completely agree with what you're saying here, and I saw those reactions over the weekend about like, oh, it's not okay for Kim Mulkey to do it, but it was okay for Bob Knight. Like, no, Bob Knight got fired, everybody, and was. Demonized for the back half. I mean, at best was considered a villain by half the country. I mean, what do we thought that let's not rewrite what the perception was of these guys. Yes.
And by the way,
this is her leveling up. This isn't sexist for the LA Times accusing the Washington Post of sexism for the piece. Like, no, it's equality in a weird way.
Yeah, no. And it's like, you know, and Coach Knight and Coach Mulkey can say the same thing. And I'm, you know, like Calbert Chaney would agree. It's like, hey, do you want to win championships? That's what I do. And here's how I do it. Do you want to be remembered as a champion? Okay, well, this is my method. Do you want to hug it? You know, do you want a warm, cuddly friend? I mean, and by the way, this is such a generational thing, right? Because it's like, obviously everyone expected their coach to be a prick. That was just understood. That was baked in. And now there's this thing where you know, it's like, you can't be a bad guy or a bad woman. It's like, well, Bobby Knight was a bad guy who made basketball players better. And his badness was part of that. And so obviously Tim Mulkey's record speaks for itself. Ask all those players, like, yes, there's always a player like Dave Dameshek who would rather not get yelled at, but the winners want to win championships anyway. So good for you, Kim Mulkey. You've made it.
I get the anachronism, though, that she is. It's ironic that it would be a woman who's the last man standing from that, right? I mean, because Belichick is probably the last guy who kind of satisfies that broad description. Bob Knight's long gone. Bill Parcells is long gone. Am I missing anybody? Like that taskmaster kind of approach doesn't work anymore.
I don't know if you've seen this, and we'll see how it goes as we tape this on Monday. UConn versus the USC Jujus. But Gino Auriemma, have you noticed this like mellowing, like where he's like kind of like gracious and like aw shut? Like, I'm like, what happened to Gino Auriemma? This guy was such an arrogant a-hole for 25 years. And then now he's just like, they're great. Everything's great. Who knows? Aw shucks. And it's like, I'm like, oh, I think Gino is reading the Mulkey tea leaves and like going to do some valedictory lap. Everyone can forget about what a monster I was when I built those dynasties, but we're starting to understand the success equals not the greatest person, maybe. And by the way, anybody who's ever won a championship is definitely grateful to that coach for all those, you know, Herb Brooks, right? Herb Brooks, yeah. The ultimate, I'm going to destroy you guys psychologically, and somehow that's going to help us beat the Russians. Like, no one's going to write a hit piece about Herb Brooks, the meanie.
You're right about that. I mean, there are exceptions. Like, I guess the Emperor Chaz Knoll wasn't a taskmaster compared to his peer group. But like Terry Bradshaw to this day still has his feelings are still hurt by Terry Bradshaw, the guy who won 4 Super Bowls, got steered into that. And as far as quarterbacks go, like we've talked about here, what's fascinating to me as well is the Caleb Williams element, that there's some pushback. I don't know that anybody actually cares about this, but people are acting like it matters to them that he paints his fingernails and that he cried to his mom. And I'm not saying that doesn't matter. I'm not, you know, a leader of men and all that kind of stuff and steady hand and not too high and not too low. These are things that people have preached for the last 50 years at least. So are those out the window now? But on the other hand, Jordan Love, like we've talked about too, is just one of the guys. Patrick Mahomes, it was stunning that he was miffed that his receivers kept dropping game-winning touchdown passes to the point that he appeared cross about it. And people said, oh no, Patrick Mahomes isn't sweet anymore. He's now a meanie. And it stood out because it was so against his type. So I do wonder if not just coaches, but players are now sort of cut from people now kind of look at, I mean, his own teammates now don't like Michael Jordan. I think they were fine with Michael Jordan when they were winning the titles, but now they're all ganging up on him because he was a meanie. That's a weird turn deep into the next millennium.
It's called killer instinct. The word killer is right in there. Like it's not warm and cuddly instinct. But watch what I'm about to do from Caleb Williams to my good goat. Red Auerbach. Okay. All right. Now you're always poo-pooing those Celtic championships, the big early chunk of championships.
They're fine. I just think they're overrated.
But I don't know, like when Cy Green goes number one overall and Bill Russell is sitting at number two, I don't know that it took any great genius. Russell goes two, and then Auerbach trades Ed McCauley and Cliff Hagan for Bill Russell. That's the genius. He's like, this guy is a generational player. I'm going to trade McCauley and Cliff Hagan for Bill Russell, and I'm going to win 11 championships in 13 years. But I want to focus on later Red Auerbach, you know, away from the early championships that you say get an asterisk, drafting Larry Bird sixth overall a year before he could come out, and all the other GMs being like, wait, are you allowed to do that? We could have drafted Larry Bird. The first five teams could have drafted the best player. Oh, yeah, yeah, we're just going to hang out. You know, we have to sign him or he goes back into the draft, but we'll take that chance. So Bird, amazing. Then Purdue making it to the Final Four, and it's just so warm and fuzzy for me. I'm a little older than you, Sheck, so I remember Caleb Williams is the definite number one pick. And you're like, okay, when you know that, and everyone would love that guy, you have value, you don't know that he's going to the Hall of Fame, okay? Joe Barry Carroll, everyone knew was going to be the number one overall pick. He was coveted, and the Celtics had that pick. And they didn't want Joe Barry Carroll, but they knew everybody else wanted Joe Barry Carroll. So the Celtics traded the number one pick, which would be Joe Barry Cares, and the number 13 pick, which would be a guy named Ricky Brown who hurt his knee, for Robert Parrish and the number 3 pick. So it went Joe Barry Carroll, Daryl Griffith, who you mentioned, Dr. Duncanstein, 2, guy named Kevin McHale, 3. So the Celtics got Kevin McHale and Robert Parrish for Joe Barry Carroll and Ricky Brown. And this, so if you're sitting at one with Caleb Williams and you know everybody would trade up for that, but you think Drake May might be better, you could get McHale at 3, Drake May at 3. What, you know, and you have all this value in number one when everybody has the same opinion about number one. So I've been reliving that trade in my mind because the Boilermakers are going back to the Final Four, and it's reminding me of that time when Auerbach knew this guy might be a bum. This guy doesn't work very hard.
It's amazing. These origin stories in Boston has been home to the apparently sort of anomalous ones of like a Brady in his underpants getting drafted in the sixth round. And where did this come from? And right, the Celtics of the 80s are kickstarted by exactly what you're describing, and Gil Brandt getting one over on the Seahawks to steal Tony Dorsett out of Pitt for Dan Dornick and some a bag of nails or whatever the hell the Seahawks got for him, and the 74 Pittsburgh Steelers draft that sets the foundation for that dynasty, and all of those things come down to that. I guess Boston, though, is sort of home to the best versions of those. Like Bobby Orr, when he hit the ice from day one, was like, who the hell is this guy? He's a defenseman? Made no sense. And same thing with the Red Sox of 75. For all of baseball's history, you never saw it. And then Fred Lynn and Jim Rice are the two best players in the entire American League, and they're both rookies. How that Roger Clemens makes the scene, and in his rookie year, he strikes out 19. I don't think any sports town can really stack up with these cool first chapter of origin stories that Boston has, huh?
And so, you know, the Patriots are sitting there at number 3, and everyone in Boston is hoping for the Markelle Fultz, right, Lonzo Ball, Jason Tatum draft. You know, like, is the best player going to be at 3? Nobody knows. People pretend they know. People pretend painting your nails matters. People, you know, and then, by the way, after every pro day, that's the best pro day we've ever seen. After everyone, JJ McCarthy, that's the best pro day we've ever seen. You know, Jaden Daniels, we've never seen a pro day like this. It's like, they're running around in shorts. It's like a NBA draft pick. Like, he scored every time against the chair.
The craziest. I've talked to many, many scouts and coaches about exactly this. The best thing Johnny Manziel did was he wore a helmet and pads for his pro day. Like, at least you're approximating game conditions. When you're in your underpants and in a t-shirt, no helmet, and nobody in your face. Remember, they like, I think they took the brooms out and all that to make it tougher on Johnny Football at his thing. Respect. Everybody else is just like, what does any of this mean? How does this translate into game conditions?
It's funny too, when they're cutting together the montage of like, just unbelievable. Like he's completing everything.
Oh my God. He can throw it 50. No, he can throw it 60 yards. Like
one of the quarterbacks to neighbors, you know, that they include in the montage really hung up there. You're like, yeah, I don't think that's going to be a completion in the NFL. That thing really had too much air under it. You'd like a little more zip on that. But anyway, so
you're in the sweet spot, though. My, as I've told you before, you're in the spot that Damashek desires in life. You don't want the pressure of like this guy or that guy, and it's going to define the next 15 years of your entire franchise. Like, better get this one right. Like, let the other guy choose, and then you can't blame me if it goes wrong. Like, why they took the other guy? Like, all that was left was this guy. We took our shot with him. Well, don't get angry at me, public. That's what we talked to Mike Tannenbaum about last week. It was a great episode, by the way. Go back and listen to it because we dig in on the quarterback league and all the big issues right now. But talking about that pressure, like, if you're the GM, if you're the one tasked with getting the right guy, how hard is it to not just go like, well, it sounds like 80%. Of the world wants me to take this guy. At least I have that coverage. Like everybody else thought I was right taking this guy too, you know, and that, yeah. And how going against that is crazy.
Trubisky at 2 and Mahomes at 10. And you know, the football world is signs off until history is written. And so, you know, yes, Caleb Williams might be Peyton Manning and Jaden Daniels might be Ryan Leaf, but it might be the other way around, you know? And so it is.
Send me your what ifs, by the way, at -3 pod. I got a good one that over the weekend. Somebody asked, what if Mahomes had gone to the Bears at 2? And of course, you know, much debated, but would Mahomes have turned out if he hadn't gone to Andy Reid and sat for a year behind Alex Smith and all of that? Questionable. But also, I love stuff like this. Hugh Jackson, QB Whisperer, allegedly, head coach of the Browns at the time, is like, no, we're going to tank out in 2017. We'll take Myles Garrett, who has turned out to be an all-pro. I get it. But Hugh Jackson's like, I like Mahomes, but I like this Myles Garrett better. Ergo, they don't take the GOAT. And now Browns fans are arguing with me online, like, everybody thought Garrett was the right pick. It's like, okay, but you have the benefit of hindsight. Do you still think that was the right pick? Not taking the guy who now everybody calls the greatest of all time? You happier with it? And Deshaun Watson, is that a better situation for you? Anyway, send me those because I like tackling them. And maybe I'll write them up for you. Anyway, sorry, Hench, I interrupted you.
No. So anyway, so as we come up on the NFL draft, you know, these franchise-making decisions are about to be made. As we've talked, you know, offline ad nauseum about the 74 Steelers draft, transforming that franchise. They got kicked out of them by the Raiders in the playoffs in 73, 33-14. The Raiders ran for 220-something yards against them, and they knew they needed a linebacker. So they get Swan in the first round out of USC. They get Lambert in the second round out of Kent State. They get Stallworth in the fourth round. From Alabama A&M or something. And then they get Mike Webster from Wisconsin in the fifth round. And then they get Donnie Shell, undrafted free agent, 5 Hall of Famers in one draft. And, that could be you, 2024 GM. They're there somewhere. Those Easter eggs are in there somewhere. Don't pick the wrong guy. And, so that's what makes it so exciting. And that, you know, and this is what writes history. Is Auerbach going like, Larry Bird's so much better than these other guys. I'll take him 6 and hope we sign him. And then saying like, I think Kevin McHale's better than Joe Barry Carroll. Let's see what we can get. Let's get the 3 pick and get McHale. See if we can't get that center, the chief too. So you get 2/3 of the front court for nothing. Right.
And then Dennis Johnson gets added. What year is that? Like 83?
Dennis Johnson gets added for Rick Roby.
Right.
Another stiff. As that's a great point, as Auerbach fleeces people. Auerbach is a great example. Don't take his calls. just go, it's Red Auerbach on line one. Tell him I'm at lunch. Like, don't, you're never going to win that transaction. Hey, Red Auerbach's calling.
It's a great point.
He's offering Rick Roby out of Kentucky for DJ. DJ's crazy because DJ fell out of favor in two cities where he was awesome, in Seattle and Phoenix, and then came to Boston. And it's like, yeah, we had no problem with this guy. I don't know what the problem was in Seattle or Phoenix with DJ, but they traded him.
Well, speaking of DJ, you know what's funny? So DJ, you say DJ. DJ Burns is now the eye of everyone's affection.
Beautiful. Love
him. Everybody loves him. I feel, again, like somebody who was into an indie band and now it's gone major label and I'm a little bit raw that the rest of the world has locked in on this guy. He's been a delight for the ACC weirdos out here for some time. But DJ Dennis Johnson is one example of the late, great Dennis Johnson of in honor of DJ Burns' rise. Are the Boston Celtics of the 80s, are they the least shapely dynasty of all time? I mean, Dennis Johnson was kind of zoftic. He had like a pot belly. Kevin McHale remains goony to this day. Doesn't look like his parts should be coordinated enough to
you mean, make like, a layup. That's basically the ugliest dynasty with their shirts off.
I mean, Larry Bird. Yeah. I mean, that's the face of your team. Larry Bird.
That's pretty fun. Not, you know, Chief had a little muscle tone, but yeah, that's a pretty unshapely.
Greg Kite.
Beefy Greg Kite.
Bill Walton was best Walton, old man Bill Walton with the bad knees, at least to the eye, was the guy who looked at least the most like a basketball player. Hail Danny Ainge. Coming off the hot corner up in Toronto.
Of zoftig hoopers. But so, you know, Spaghetti's dearly departed Jared Lorenzen, I think, would appreciate DJ Burns getting the hefty lefty moniker. Mm. He's earned it, I think, you know, Amen. Certainly in this tournament. By the way, I know I've been all over Duke for bad goat this week, as they deserve, but Shire didn't want to adjust on DJ Burns. Just want to try and man up a DJ Burns. You don't want to throw a 2-1-2 or even a junk defense against him. Something, you're just going to ride with this thing that's not working at all. And until the lead gets, you know, it's double digits. I mean, and they were like afraid to run a double team at him because he's such a good passer. It's like, well, pick your poison. This guy's annihilating you.
It's funny you say that, because I think what I was thinking was, you know, two games ago, as a matter of fact, with DJ Burns, and now he dropped, 29-30 on Sunday to get to the Final Four. I think that Duke was legitimately had too much information. NC State, like I say, if you've watched NC State through this season, DJ Burns was not a killer. He was a great passer out of the high post. And was funny to look at, and, you know, a handful on the block, but it never amounted to 20 points, or rarely did. Now, all of a sudden, he's a completely different player. So I think Duke was waiting for, like, when's he going to regress to DJ Burns already? This run that he's on can't continue. They have some killers on the perimeter.
Now, Sheck, I'm having trouble remembering. Maybe you can remember. Who's the last team that beat NC State? It was so long ago.
Don't get me upset. I want to be happy for NC State, not upset that NC State, by winning the ACC tournament, replaced my Pitt Panthers, much as Russell Wilson replaced Kenny Pickett, the Pitt quarterback, with the NC State quarterback in Pittsburgh. Some strong irony there. I don't want to get down about it. But yes, Villanova in 1985, before their magical, improbable, impossible even run, who hammered them? In the city of Pittsburgh, in their last regular season loss, it was the Pitt Panthers in the field house. I was there for it. And I remember me and the old man and Uncle Mike there. And Raleigh Massimino was in such rare form. And he was, you know, I mean, looked insane at all times. Like DJ Burns, but as a coach, just like unkempt and hair all over the place and everything else. But he was really pissed on this day. Pitt whipped them by 30 through the first half. And I think that it and now here we are again. Now another magic run. And Pitt, no one's going to remember, took care of this NC State team. Not once, but twice. Did Pitt make the tournament? No, they didn't. My voice is going to go higher. I'm very upset about it.
Beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
Are you done, Hench?
Bitter shit. Yeah, I'm done. I got Red Hour back. I got the Duke women. I'm all done.
Okay. I'll say this very quickly. Another guy hit a three-run shot in the seventh on Sunday. Rowdy Tellez, another shapely, high-end athlete, putting the Buccos, turning their two-run deficit into a one-run lead that Aroldis Chapman helped them secure where they wanted in extras. The Buccos are 4-0. Raise it. It's very exciting. I wonder how sustainable it is. I'm not sure in the very short term, but legitimately, and I get the arm injuries that plague these young guys, and I'm not trying to talk it into being or anything else, and I'm worried about it already, but Jared Jones on Saturday comes out and is throwing 100 mile an hour of heat. And as I'm sure baseball fans are aware, the LSU first overall pick still now in AAA, but he'll soon be with the Buccos. The reason he's not right now is because of that contractual stuff and an extra year of control and all that. But he's throwing in the low 100s. I mean, they've got their 1-2 kind of figured out here, and their lumber is, to my eye, legit. What do you think, Hench?
Well, as you know, I bet the Buccos over 74.5 based on your scouting report that said they had actual major leaguers this year.
Magic number, 71.
Yeah. Now, I it's great that you got guys throwing in the low 100s, but have you read about this Sid Finch? He throws in the mid 100s.
Right.
On this day of all days. You want a guy who can really get it up there. By the way, you mentioned Aroldis Chapman. He's real. And, you know, after we were burned by Sid Finch and they started, you know, we all had that Guinness Book of World Records that said Nolan Ryan was clocked at 100.9. And that just stood for decades as the fastest recorded pitch was Nolan Ryan. And if you watch Nolan Ryan, you're like, well, yeah, whatever this guy throws, that's the fastest. Then they're like, there's a guy in Cuba throwing 105. And you're like, okay, you got me with the Sid Finch. Nice try. It's going to go from 100.9 to 105. That's ridiculous. That would be like Usain Bolt running an 8.9 100, like mathematically, like no way. Mm-hmm. And that guy comes from the island. He threw 105 miles an hour. Insane. Couldn't always aim it, but got to be one of the least comfortable at bats in major league history facing that.
Yeah. Right. Up there with big unit for like, can't settle into the box. If you're the batter there, quick shout out to baseball. Cause I was thinking about my point about March Madness peaks because it just has this uninterrupted run of a decade of great Final Fours going baseball. I was trying to think, Stanley Cup Finals, there's not like an extended run in our lifetime of great showdowns for the Stanley Cup. NBA, you know, its sweet spot was obviously when the Lakers and Celtics almost were playing each other, but a little dissatisfying because you would love to have seen one more chapter of that. The NFL, the Super Bowl run, like there's not really a great run. There are maybe 5-year windows that compete. I think it's baseball that has it, Hench, starting around 75 with your probably your second most hated World Series. But I think there's an extended run there from about 75 to through 88 till you get to Kirk Gibson of pretty good fall classics. And that ignores, though, the greatest World Series of all time, 1991. Anyway, just wanted to.
Well, I mean, you know, right in the middle of it, I'm sure, you know, and you're just enough younger than me that you don't have great memories of some of these events. But man, I remember that 79 series.
I remember it.
We Are Family Buccos. And I, you know, when you're a neutral, your team's not playing. Sometimes you don't really remember why you latched on to one team
That's
or the other.
So
and
right.
I was like, I am all in on the Pirates, man. Pop Stargell's got to win this thing. And every time he came up in a clutch situation, he delivered. And that Pirates team, obviously, we didn't know at the time that they were doing so much blow, which just makes it better in retrospect. The Cobra,
I don't think they were into that stuff until like 80, 81. Maybe. I don't remember. Steve Howe, 81, finishes off that World Series in Dodger Stadium against the Yanks. That was that's a World Series I don't remember that well, but I do remember, obviously. I remember Bert be home, Bly Levin, striking out on a breaking ball, striking out Cesar Geronimo to close out the Red Legs to advance to the World Series. There,
scrap iron, Bill Garner.
That's a good entry. Your beloved Boston Celtics of the 80s, the 79 family Buccos, another unshapely great.
Well, baseball,
Bill Madlock. But think about it. Bill Madlock, the recently passed Ed Ott. Tim Foley wasn't exactly a professional athlete looking guy. Pop Stargell was known for being fat. Dave Parker was on his way.
I mean, Bruce Kieson was so skinny until he stood next to Kenta Kovac.
Think about that team. Grant Jackson and Omar Moreno, too. Combined, Bruce Kieson, Kenta Kovac, and Omar Moreno combined 103 pounds.
Oh, my God.
All right. Take it away, Eddie Spaghetti. You're goat and goats.
Well, I'm going to just do all goats, one-sided positive goats here. I feel like I've been too nervous or upset lately with sports. I was kind of ragging on the
Yankees. Anthony Volpe's belly was upset over the weekend, too.
I just was ragging on the Yankees. I'm getting nervous over the Rangers. Knicks are heading towards the playoff time. So I want to be positive because it was a very, very, very good weekend for myself and for the teams that I root for the schools that I've attended. I'll start off with BU for the listeners. They can't see. I am wearing my Boston University Terriers Kevin Shattenkirk jersey. Win over RIT in the first round of the Frozen Four. That was expected. Tough second round matchup versus Minnesota, who's just perennially, late in the game, always in the Frozen Four, deep into it. And they had to play them in the South Dakota Regional, which is a lot closer to Minnesota. Like Boston U was not lucky enough to get in the Mass Regional. So basically an away game for them. Won that game, and now they advance to the Frozen Four versus Denver, another tough game. I'm really hoping that Michigan does beat BC so we don't have to face Boston College again because they are loaded. But BU is led by Macklin Celebrini, one of the youngest players in college hockey, and will be the first overall pick in the upcoming NHL draft. So got to give a shout out to them. Then I'll move on to the Rangers, my pro team. 8-5 win over the Coyotes. Jonathan Quick, who was the fourth goalie on the Vegas Knights in their cup run, looked like he was pretty much done with the NHL, comes to the Rangers, is just coached up by Benoit Allaire, probably the greatest single position coach in NHL history. I mean, look at all the goalies that he's made fantastic in his career with the Rangers. Now Quick extended for another season. 392 victories, the most all time for an American goaltender. So I got to shout him out, surpassing Ryan Miller, his good buddy. So Jonathan Quick is now the all time winningest leader for goalies. Adam Fox gets his 300th point. Chris Kreider gets his 300th goal with the Rangers. So they're looking great. And then the team that I was ragging on and, I was afraid for this season. The Yankees go and sweep the Astros 4-0 in Houston, and Juan Soto, a guy who's really trying to play for his next contract, is now basically playing his way into a blank check territory, which is probably the worst thing the Yankees front office has to deal with now. But the home run, throwing a guy out at the plate, and then the hit yesterday to put the Yankees up a run, and it just seems like he's just playing so fired up, and he's yelling, and he's running the bases, and he's hugging Verdugo and Judge in the outfield. He's happy to be here, or so I hope. But he right now is fantastic, batting almost 600, has a ton of hits already. I mean, I knew he was great, and I tweeted this, but I didn't realize how phenomenal he was, and he's still so young. So I have nothing to complain about. It was a fantastic weekend for me and my sports teams.
Well, happy a Easter. Couple of thoughts on the sickening development that the Yankees are good. Obviously, it's terrible. This is my silver lining, is that Juan Soto conservatively is going to slash 350, 450, 650. That conservative. It could exceed those numbers, obviously exceeding them right now. Shohei Ohtani is not going to pitch this year. So your apples to apples comparison when this contract starts being negotiated is going to be, I had a way better season than the $700 million guy. Way better. So let's start at $700 million and work our way up from there. So I know the Yankees will have to re-sign this guy because he's going to be so phenomenal. they'll be under that only the Yankees, the only team that can have this kind of pressure where it's like, you just can't get outspent for a guy your fans have fallen in love with. So hopefully he costs them $1 billion. And then develops a drug addiction. I don't know, something, but anyway, I don't know. But I will say, to the BU of it all, this is where Spaghetti and I park our cars in the same garage, because obviously Charlie Coyle, Charlie McAvoy, Matt Grizzlick, mm-hmm. Kevin Shattenkirk, like, I love BU. I'm a terrier through and through with Spaghetti when it comes to
me too. Some of my guys are relevant, obviously. Some of my Pittsburgh Penguins herald from that area.
Hockey Factory.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I said this to Spaghetti the other day. We're talking about unshapely great teams. How about that Yankees outfield? Is that the biggest physical, just brawn ever assembled in baseball? I mean, Aaron Judge, Giancarlo, and now Juan Soto. Ever a more intimidating trio?
Adonis's.
Yes.
Adonis's, you know, like... Those guys in the sport where you can be shaped like Ed Ott and Pop Stargell, you're allowed to be shaped like that. It's weird that it's weird how much time we're spending on the physical beauty of these men, but it is wild that the Yankees, that they look better with their shirts off than the basketball playing 80s Celtics.
It is strange. And then one last thing I want to sprinkle on top of that. Pete Incaviglia, the unshapely, not Gorman Thomas, not Pete Incaviglia, Cy Young winner, 1982 hench from the Brewers.
Pete Vukovich.
Jeez Louise. Pete Vukovich, the unshapely, looks kind of drunk. Gorman Thomas's drinking buddy plays the slugger for the New York Yankees in Major League. A lot of people don't know that. Did you know that, Eddie Spaghetti? Cy Young Award winner in 1982 for the Brewers is the slugger for the Yankees in Major League.
Where else movie are you going to get this gold? I mean, we did the 1980s NCAA tournament, get the 1982 Cy Young Award winner with a movie cameo.
Wait till I go down the wormhole of figuring out that Crazy Heart starring Jeff Bridges that includes Bob Duvall. And at the very end of the credits, because I left it running because I was typing something, I heard a voice. I was like, wait, that's Robert Duvall singing a cappella, a great old country song. And he plays, of course, in Tender Mercies. He plays the country music singer who's a burnt out drunk who's saved by the love of a good woman, just like Jeff Bridges is. Oh, it's the best. See, I guess laid it out for you, but it goes deeper than that. But we'll do that at a later date. And now a quick break.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hench, do you want to leave us with a best bet for you? Or have you said your
piece? Well, I was like, look, I mean, obviously the price now is miserable. But one thing that's become clear in this tournament, when UConn plays well, they blow the other team out. When they play poorly, they blow the other team out. Mm. Like their starting guards were 1 for 15 at halftime. against Illinois, they were up 5. You're like, oh, they're shooting what you shoot from half court. Their percentage is what the fans shoot when they get pulled out of the crowd, and they're up 5. So that the continuation of that 30 zip run was sort of preordained. I think Houston was the team physically that could have given them problems, and I don't really see a matchup that's going to stop the Huskies. So it seems like free money. I already gave out the LSU women, which by the time you're listening to this may not be right anymore, as they get the rematch against the.
So bet on the Penguins over the Rags tonight.
Poor Pens. March of the Penguins the March of the Penguins is finally over. Now we're into the April of the Penguins.
Oh, there were. I will 8 say seconds. One other the thing. Penguins went up 3-1 against Columbus, and if they would have won that game, they would have been 6 points back of the Flyers with 2 games in hand. If they win those, they would have been 2 points back. It would have been doable. And by the time in the amount of time it just took me to say what I said to you, the Jackets scored a goal to make it 3-2, and then they ended up winning it in overtime. But it was a glorious 8 seconds to think maybe.
I'll take one more thing. Is I will say that the LSU Iowa number, if you're hearing this before tip off, is 169, which seems way too high. Nice. for a high pressure tournament game. So I would go under 169.
Okay, very nice, Hench. A great episode once again. We're going to get into the NFC side. We were going to do that, but we got sidetracked with important stories about Dave playing high school basketball when the game was already settled, because, of course, Dave would never be put into a game when the result was still on the line. Dynamite stuff from you, though, Hench. Go make your pages, make us proud, and we'll talk to you next week, fella. There he goes, the great Kevin Hench, everybody. Eddie Spaghetti, any best bet you want to float before we say goodbye and move on to later in the week?
I think if you want to bet on some baseball action, a really easy series, in my opinion, to bet on. The Atlanta Braves are heading to Chicago to take on the White Sox. White Sox are 0-3 right now. Braves, I believe, 2-1 or 3-1, but obviously the far superior team. They should win the NL East. They should be a massive favorite to win the NL East. One of the best teams, one of the best rosters in baseball. We talked about their win totals. They're in the 102.5 win total mark. So I think if you want to just hammer the Braves to beat up on the pretty lowly Chicago White Sox, I think that's a really smart move.
All right, we'll leave it at that. I will, when we talk again on Thursday, I believe, we'll get into that. And in the meantime, me and Sarah Tiana and Eddie Spaghetti will join you on Wednesday morning for a new episode of Extra Points. Trendy with Toby Mergler rolling on. 3 episodes for you there. Lemon Pepper Parlay with the fellas. Getting you right, looking at the NFL draft and the NBA playoffs as they approach. Check it all out. The Extra Points Network is where it's at. Getting you right for the right bet to make and beyond. And with that being said, ooh, by the way, go back and listen to that Mike Tannenbaum episode. I really thought it was very good stuff there from a guy who is plugged in and has been in those war rooms and the thought process and what goes on there. I thought it was legit fascinating. And by the way, I appreciate you dropping us a line on -3pod at Damashek. You can hit me up there on the Twitter, D Damashek on Instagram. I love to interact on those things. So hit us up there. We appreciate the notes. And with all that being said, for Kevin Hench, Eddie Spaghetti, and everybody at the Extra Points Network, thanks so much, sports fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.